Accession number 4423, reel number 4.
Colonel Lewis, reel 4. Did you have any important visitors whilst you were in Somaliland?
Oh, yes, we had the Maharaja of Kutch. The Maharaja of Kutch had met Sir Geoffrey Archer, who had been governor of Somaliland in the past and governor general of Sudan in the south of France. And they thought it would be very nice if they made a visit to the to Addis Ababa to meet the Rastafarian. And there was a lot of preparation going on for this expedition. Burden camels were mustered, and I had, at Hargeisa, I was getting communications about it. And a lot of retired Somali civil servants from the police and so on were called up in order to conduct this caravan, camels, and eventually it was all set, and the Maharaja arrived with a nice lot of presents for the Rastafarian. He had saddles and rifles and, tremendous lot of presents. And they came up to Hargeisa, where I discovered I was surrounded by the Maharaja of Kutch and Sir Geoffrey Archer, who was Your Excellency, Sir Baxter Kittimus, the governor of Somaliland, was there. That was Your Excellency. And the Maharaja of Kutch was Your Highness. I had to be very careful with these titles when I was talking to them. And the great day came, and they all left. And they went over the frontier, and they were heading for Addis. I envied them. I wished I'd been going with them. The Maharaja was rather old. He had his young crown prince with him. And we were worried because he always seemed to want to shoot a lion. We thought the chances were that the lion would get the Maharaja rather than the other way around. And so they left and they crossed the frontier and they got into Abyssinia, somewhere near Jigjiga, I suppose, somewhere up there towards Addis. And the Ras there, the head, the ruler, decided that he wasn't going to let this caravan go through without getting a share of, and the more he thought about it, the more ambitious he became. So he sent a raiding party down there, and they found the caravan all loaded up with these expensive presents. Sir Geoffrey Archer was there, the Maharaja of Kutch, and the Crown Prince. But fortunately, at that moment, they'd gone off to look for Lan in the hills somewhere. So they weren't actually with the caravan. Well, the Ras, his army, of course, he officially knew nothing at all about all this. They attacked and they looted the whole lot, took it all. And they killed most of the Somalis, the people the government had offered them, you see. And so, a few days afterwards, in the middle of the night, there was a tremendous noise around my place in Hargeisa. People running and shouting and yelling. So I asked what was happening. They said, oh, everybody's been killed on the other side of the frontier. They've been attacked and the whole lot have been killed. So I said, well, what about the Maharaja? Was he killed? No, they think he's all right, but they don't know where he is. They can't find him. They've gone. So eventually the whole, the survivors came back and the trip to Addis was off. But this led to a diplomatic overtures to London, of course, about all this. It was very embarrassing for the Abyssinian government and there was big compensation to pay for the Somalis who lost their lives. By the by, a Somali who was killed was priced at 100 camels. And a woman was 50 camels. So there were all these hundreds of camels to be accounted for, the victims of this expedition. And I think it was about 2 years afterwards, Sir Baxter Kittimaster himself, who was governor, went through to Addis to finish the negotiations with the Abyssinian government about this disastrous trip. And he put in a big bill of a compensation for the camel, the DIA it was called, DIA. This was the compensation due to, if you killed a man, well, you paid 100 camels, and all was forgotten, more or less. They had to settle all this. Well, he put in a bill, say, for £10,000, which in those days was quite a lot, perhaps more, actually, but say 10,000. And he got 5,000 awarded by the court. So the Mexican master, after it was all over, got hold of some official in the Abyssinian government and said, "How is it that I only got half what I asked for?" And the official said, "But surely that's what you expected. Do you mean to say you expected £10,000? Well, you should have asked for 20."
What was the role of the Somaliland Camel Corps supposed to be in your time there?
Internal security was the main function, but one must remember that there were nearly 900 to 1,000 miles of frontier there, and most on the frontier there were gangs like today's terrorists, almost gangs of people living on looting, and therefore there was the constant threat and of invasion by quite large parties across the frontier from Italian Somaliland, the Midgetain tribes and the Dorba Hunter. The Dorba Hunter, yes, they were rather active too, and they were known as Barads. They denied big areas of grazing to our tribes because when they were active, the tribes couldn't go to those neighborhoods, you see. They had to stay back and lose all this valuable grass that was growing down there. If they went down, they were probably raided. Yes, there was that sort of threat from externally, but basically the Camel Corps was not equipped or trained for service overseas. It was internal security in Somaliland.
What was the attitude of the Somalis towards the Ethiopians in those days?
Well, most of the tribes that were living near Ethiopia or Abyssinia didn't like them. You see, they were known as Habashi. They were suspected of being raiders of some sort. And I just say there was some conflict of interest. The Somalis are nomadic people with camels, whereas over the border sometimes you get into cultivated areas. And you see these two elements in society, they don't get on, the stock owners and the agricultural. So there was animosity between them. They were not friendly, certainly not.
In the period of the 20s in which you were serving in Somaliland, I think you were involved in a number of operations. And that when you first arrived there, you were involved in the winding up of the Mad Mullah operations against the Mad Mullah. Can you tell me what that involved?
The principal, I think, one of the principal operations while I was with the Camel Corps was out towards Point Garafui, right up in the Horn of Africa, where the northern Midgetain lived, the tribe. They were under leaders, sheikhs. They were well known, these sheikhs. They were administered indirectly by the Italian government. The Italian government was to some extent responsible for them, but I don't think they went up country much. Now, these people were armed, you see. That's a hangover from the Mullah. They were, I don't think they were pro-Mullah people. They were rather anti-Mullah, but they had to be armed because the Mullah would be around with his forces. And they, when the Mullah operation was over, they found a good way of making some money. They came over the frontier into British Somaliland, and they seized one of the principal wells. In fact, probably the only well for miles round. And they built a fort over it. And then they were powerful. The Somali, local Somalis were not so well armed and were not a big tribe. They simply stayed there and said, all right, well, you can water here, yes, but you've got to pay for it. Bring your camels whenever you like, but it'll cost you a bit of money, that's all. That's what we're doing here. And this went on for some time. Well, the local district commissioner up there, Derry Garbo, was reporting all this, of course, and the government decided that these people must be removed. So the Camel Corps was ordered to prepare to march, and eventually we marched. It was quite a long way. And we even took a gun. Mackay, the second in command of the Camel Corps, was in the Royal Artillery, and he found an old naval gun down at Berbera, probably a relic of the Muller operations. And he had it brought up, and he had a team of mules. They were a bit of a nuisance. They were always dragging, lagging behind us, sometimes a day or two behind us. And eventually we arrived at Baran. Baran was the place with the water. And we found this large fort in that context, Somali context. It was quite a big thing. Certainly the local tribes wouldn't be able to do much with it. And it was manned, so we had a small battle there. And Mackay, much to his delight, actually fired his gun. And as far as I could see, the shells were coming straight at me. But we had to go up and clear the heights round. And a few of the Mediterranean were killed up there. I found their bodies. And we got possession of the fort. It was very thick walls, 4 or 5 feet thick, some of them. Now, it was going to be a very awkward thing to destroy. So we had explosives with us, and Mackay and considered himself rather knowledgeable about explosives. He was a gunner officer. So we put in a lot of gun cotton or something all the way around inside this fort. And we had an exploder and a lot of wire, and we were going to fire it. Well, it was going to be very awkward if it didn't go off. So Mackay and I had the exploder with us, and we said, now, let's blow it. So he pressed the thing, and by God, it didn't go off. And there we were, left with a fort full of explosive, and no forager. So after deliberations, Mackay was desperately anxious to get this done because he felt he was in some way responsible with his explosives and knowledge and his gun and everything. And he was by that time commanding the Camel Corps. Gladstone had left. So he and I had to sum up enough courage and go into this fort and find out why it hadn't gone off, you see. I dreaded every second of this. We were in this terrible place, looking around, all the gun cotton round the sides, and we found where the connection was, and Mackay did a bit of tampering here and there, and then he said, well, I think we'll have to give it another shot. I've done all I can to make it reliable. So out we went, and we went back to the exploder, and we fired, and it went off, and it blew the thing miles up. It was a great heap of stones. There was no sign of the fort. It was most effective. Mackay had put in so much explosive in the second session, he was determined to absolutely reduce the fort to stones. It all collapsed in a heap over the wells. So then, of course, the wells were opened. Then we were encamped there, and that night, or the night afterwards, we heard that there were thousands of Mediterranean advancing on us. They were going to have a battle. And this news reached us at night from the Somalis who ran in with the news. They said, oh, the royal countries, they're inclined to exaggerate a lot, the Somalis, who are in excitement at the moment. They told us there were thousands of these people coming. So Mackay decided that we must leave that place and try and deceive them in this way. So the Camel Corps, we saddled up and we marched. And we went right off at a tangent into looking for these people. Well, by the time dawn came, we hadn't found anybody. And we were still without casualties of any sort. So we sent a few patrols out to... Of course, tracking was the great thing in Somaliland. You followed people's tracks. That's how you got them. The Somali had a proverb. If you've got a person's tracks, then you've got him. If you've got camel tracks, then you've got the camels. So we found traces of people who'd been round, but nothing like the thousands the Somalis had seen. And we came back. Well, that area remained agitated for some time because the Midgetain were not at all pleased with being removed from this lucrative occupation of taking money from our tribes. And they were no doubt looking at the Camel Corps to see whether it was worth taking on or not. Camel Corps had a very healthy reputation amongst the tribes. They thought it was a very powerful thing. And after all, it was the ultimate instrument of the government. The government couldn't remain in Somaliland, I don't suppose, for long without the Camel Corps there.
I think that you were also involved at some stage in operations against the Black Issa tribe. Could you tell me about that?
Yes, that was right at the beginning when I first went to Hargeisa to join C Company, the Pony Company. Yes, it was simply that the tribe up there was giving the district commissioner a good deal of trouble. They were very wild people, very fuzzy-wuzzy type, very tall and warlike, very warlike people. And in contact with the Abyssinians on the up there, you see, it was getting close to the mountains of Abyssinia. So they've been defending themselves for generations. And they were refusing to cooperate with the government. And so with C Company, we went up there and the governor. And eventually they all came in and talked. But we had to take full sort of military precautions while we were up there, in case they attacked. They were a big tribe, and that's the kind of operation that was. There was no actual fighting. I don't think we fired any shots, but we were constantly looking and watching in case there was a night attack on this camp. We had the governor, and we were responsible for him.
I think that you were also went on a patrol expedition to cross the Sal Haud, which was a hitherto unexplored area. Could you tell me about that particular expedition?
Yes, well, Sal Haud, as far as is known, had not been crossed by any white man up to that time. So the Somalis, or they all told me. It was at the end of the Midgetain operation when the governor decided to send a patrol through the Haud to a place called El Lagodi, which was the only watering place in the Haud. And there was another fort there. It was known there was another fort built by the Midgetain over the water. So we were A Company, I was detailed to go off, and there were no other Europeans with me. And we went into the Sal Haud. The first night it poured with rain and terrible thunder. The rains broke early, much earlier than we expected. So we had that additional trouble, but fortunately we weren't worried by rain anymore. And we made our way, we had one or two guides, And they said they were nervous if we got a lot of water because they might lose their way. They might, they were to some extent following, you see, everybody in that area, those tribes that got into that area at all, would be making for Eldegardi for the water. So you could follow their tracks to some extent. And they're a bit nervous when it started raining. And eventually we got to Eldegardi, we found the fort, we had nothing to blow it up with. There was nobody there. We found traces of people. They'd been there quite recently. The water was absolutely appalling. You could smell it miles away. It's gypsum water, and if you drank any, you would have tummy trouble for months. So I didn't quench my thirst from those wells. And then we headed off down towards Tully, which is where the Mad Mullah's forts were. This was probably about another two or three nights trekking. We travelled at night mainly. And we went down through the Howe down to a place called Hallin, which was near Tully. And there was a lot of water, very bad surface water. Surface water. Horrible smell, of course. I got used to that. And there were a lot of reeds around there. And one of my men told me there was some lan in there. So I thought I would go in and have a look at the lan and perhaps shoot one. And so I went into the reeds and I found the lan tracks. And then one of my skari came up to me and said, I found a lot of tracks of a raiding party. So I went with my experts and we examined it and we found that there were about 30 to 40 men driving a lot of camels. And they'd been raiding somewhere and they'd gone back into the Howd. So I had to make up my mind what I was going to do about this. I regarded the trip basically as a sort of peace mission coming down through the Howd. But I thought, well, I must go after these people. So I chose the best camels I'd got, so probably about a platoon of them, a troop of them, 30 or 40 camels with men, and we went after them, following their tracks. And we got closer to them, of course. We knew we were getting closer. We could tell by the camel droppings. And we knew pretty well how many camels they'd got, and we knew how many men they'd got. They'd all sat round in a circle and had a conference, and we counted their feet. And we went off into the Howd. We were going east of Eldegardi, as far as I could see. We were completely lost. Our guide said, I don't know where we are now. This is an entirely new country to me. I have no idea. So I said, well, if we hang on to the tracks, we can't go wrong because we'll go back on the tracks. But then we were afraid of the rain. Little. And eventually we caught them up, and there was a battle. They started firing at us the minute they saw us. And I regret to say we had to kill quite a lot of them.
Did you have any casualties yourself?
No, none. Although I had two or three very narrow escapes myself, no casualties. I think that was quite miraculous. We even had Vickers' guns in action at once. And so we got the camels, and we turned round and came back on our tracks, where we had to go at night. And this big supply of camels were waving about. They weren't going straight. And I remember I said, why is it? Why drive? Can't we drive them straight? We seem to be staggering about. And they said, oh, it's lan. That there are about 20 lan following us. They're off to the camels. They were with them, with the raiding party. They've come back. So we got down, eventually, we got out of the Howd and back to Hallin, where the water was. Then I began to consider, I thought, I hope I'm not terribly embarrassed, the government with this. Have I done the right thing? And it struck me that we must have been well into Etel and Somaliland. There was no frontier markings, but I was so much east of Ilagodi, I felt that, as far as I could see, that I must have been in Etel and Somaliland. I'm afraid that was true, and the Italians sent out, and they picked up a lot of cartridges all over the place, which they sent to Rome, and I suppose Rome sent them on to London and said, what about this? You see, so there was a kind of international situation. But the Somaliland government and the district commissioners, in fact, I had a tremendous welcome when I got back, especially from the district commissioner, who told me it was the best thing that had ever happened. And on the way back, the tribes that were on the our road, well, no road, of course, but they were on our path, they came and thanked me, congratulated me, said, we can use all this grazing now. And I said, but they'll come back, won't they? They said, no, they won't come back for years. They now have learnt what the camel call is like, how effective it is. He said, oh, don't worry, we're going right down into use the grass in the howd again. We haven't used it since the man Buller's operator drove us out of it. We should be back in the howd with our camels grazing. And they won't come back, don't you worry. They won't come back. I was afraid that I'd be followed, you see, that some of the survivors might reach the Mijitain tribe and bring out an awl, what we call an awl, which is an army.
How do you spell it?
A-W-L. And these awls, you see, were meant a sort of tribal army. And they might follow us, knowing that we're so far away from Barao and right out in the blue. And look at the prize, all the camel corps ammunition and the rifles, you see. Anyhow, we got away with that, and I'm glad to say a very favourable view of it was taken. There were dispatches passing from London to Rome about this. I saw copies of them. The governor showed me the copies of some of them. I was asked to comment on some. Much later on, the communication was still going on between Rome and London.